All right, like I said, we're going to talk about dreaming big a little more. And I have a question here, and do you ever get tired of dreaming small or not dreaming at all? And just kind of wandering through life with very little purpose? Maybe the second question would be, do you have a big dream in the Christian life? Now, your big dream may be walking in here and sitting down for 30 minutes. I don't know. That sounds pretty small to me, does it to you? Yeah. And so, but when I'm talking about a dream, I'm purposely using dream rather than vision, because when you use vision, it's like, oh, yeah, you're a visionary. We aren't. Okay, so let's just talk about it in terms of a dream. A dream that uses your calling, your abilities that God has given you, is that important to you, okay? Because a dream or a vision determines the risk, right? Because all dreams have a risk, right? And a risk determines the opportunity to fulfill that dream. And when we have a small dream, not much happens. When we have a big dream, a lot of things happen. Now I want to look at the book of Joshua, and Caleb is talking in here, and they have fought, they've rid the land of a lot of people, and now he wants his inheritance. And he says, "And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years. Ever since the Lord spoke his word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now here I am this day, 85 years old." Now I want you to remember that, 85 years old. "As yet I am strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. Now therefore, give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day, for you heard that in the day how the Anakim were there," they were the giants, "and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord said." Now, big dream, right? And if you recall from history, he went up into Israel when they sent people out to look, and everybody else said, "No, let's not go in. There's Anakim," and that kind of thing, but not Caleb. He said, "No, let's go take the land. The land is ours." And I look at that, and here he is, 85 years old, and he still feels young. There's nothing that's going to stop him from that dream of a mountain that he was promised 45 years ago, earlier, and he's going to take that, and he's going to drive those giants out, and he does it. Let's take Nehemiah. Nehemiah is in Babylon, and he begins to pray and cry because God said for 70 years he's not going to do anything with Israel, and then he's going to rebuild Jerusalem. And so Nehemiah decides he's going to rebuild it. Now, that's a pretty big dream, isn't it? He's in Babylon. He's going to go 1,000 miles or whatever it is to Jerusalem, and he wants to rebuild this wall, so he starts crying and praying. And finally, the king realizes that he's bummed out. And he says, "What's going on? Why are you downcast?" And he tells him about his dream, and King Cyrus gets behind his dream and said, "You go, and I will give you the funds, and I will give you the soldiers to protect." And Nehemiah goes to Jerusalem, builds the wall. Huge. Against all the enemies in Israel. You know, big dreams create action, and small or generic, vague, maybe that would be a good word, dreams usually fail to accomplish very much. You know, when we look at it, risk determines opportunities to fulfill the dream. Caleb and Nehemiah had a big, big dream and pursued their big dream. Don't you kind of feel envious when you see people with a big dream? I don't know about you, but in Christianity, when I see some of these people dream, like I went to this conference, and this guy started this kind of a denomination, and he has 2,200 churches, and I sat and talked to him face-to-face for a little bit. Very spiritual man. And I look at that and I think, man, am I dreaming small? Are we dreaming small? And it makes me feel envious of what they have. And you know, maybe we could put it this way. Have you ever taped a picture on your bathroom mirror of something you want? Or something similar that may be on your dashboard or whatever. You ever done that? You know, I remember the first time I saw that. My father put a 280Z, it was a Datsun, now Nissan, and he put a 280Z on his mirror, and every day as he shaved and brushed his teeth, he looked at that 280Z, finally bought one. That was his goal, and he bought one. Boy, it was a neat machine back then. It was kind of designed like a Jaguar. And so I thought, okay, well, I have four kids. We have to make two trips to church because we can't get them all in the car, or they're smashed in. So I put a van conversion. Now that's, let me translate that into now, an SUV, right? Okay, but they didn't have SUVs then. So we put that up there and I looked at it, and pretty soon O'Mara had a sale, and the first one there got it for like a third off. I made it in first, bought that thing, and liked to bankrupt me. Right? But that was my dream. And, you know, when we are focusing on God's kingdom, then having a small dream may be a good thing. It could even be a great thing that you're dreaming. But is it what you're called to do? Is it what God has called you to do in your life with your abilities and your talents? I want to move to Jesus. Challenge to his disciples when he said that he wanted them to go out into all the world and preach the gospel to every person. Is that a big dream? I mean, I look at it and almost takes the wind out of me. That's an audacious dream. And Jesus says it like it's no big deal. We're going to go and we're going to put the gospel out to the whole world. And I look at that dream, and it reminds me of Acts chapter 1, and I put it up here so you could see it. Therefore, when they had come together, they asked him, Jesus, saying, this is his disciples, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? And he said to them, it is not for you to know the times or seasons which the Father has put in his own authority. But you shall receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you shall be witnesses to me in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the end of the earth. Now, when he had spoken these things, while they watched, he was taken up in a cloud and received out of their sight. Now, I want you to be with me with the disciples. I can imagine Jesus probably got up into the cloud and looked down and saw them staring up at him and thinking to himself, you're so focused on me in my calling, you've lost your focus on your calling. And so while they're standing there looking and gazing, it says, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel, who also said, men of Galilee, why do you stand gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus who was taken up from you into heaven will also come in like manner as you saw him go into heaven. They were not given a generic dream. They were not given a small dream. They were given a huge dream right from the start. You may remember this when Jesus started picking his disciples, and he says in Mark 1, and as he walked by the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. Then Jesus said to them, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Now, is that crazy or what? I mean, here they are in the Sea of Galilee and they're throwing their nets out and they're fishing. And he comes along and says to them, hey, throw down your nets. Give up fishing. I'm going to make you fishers of men. Now, what would be your reaction if somebody said that to you? I think, well, you arrogant fool. Right? Who are you to tell me to throw my nets down and be fishers of men? They were going to learn how to be better fishermen. And even if they were better fishermen, is that really fulfilling? I don't think that kind of does it for me. I don't know about you. Of course, I don't like fishing all that much anyhow, at least in Colorado. But these guys were fishing for their livelihood in the Sea of Galilee, and Jesus offers them a huge dream. I mean, my gosh. Are they crazy? Are they crazy? Think about it. Here in Denver, he swings around to whatever your work is, and he goes, hey, listen, you know, I know you're doing a good job here, but follow me. We're going to be fishers of men. What would you think? What would be your response? Well, here was theirs. They immediately left their nets and followed him. Immediately dropped their nets, let everybody else keep fishing in the Galilee, and they followed him. And for about 18 months, he poured into them a dream of winning the world for him. What about us? He didn't call us to just be followers. He called us to live a dream, to walk worthy of our calling. He didn't call us to be just good Christians, but he called us, the people of Harvest Fellowship, to be fishers of men as well. So Peter and Andrew left the only thing that they knew to follow him. Now that's gutsy. That is gutsy. What is the kingdom vision for you? To be a great parent? Great. To be a churchgoer? Great. To be a great citizen? Great. That's all fine and good, but he called us to a whole lot more. Amen? He called us to danger. He called us to excitement and at the same time pain. He called us to safety. He didn't call us to safety, and he didn't call us to boredom. He didn't call us to fear. He called us to kingdom work. But remember, whether you choose to do that kingdom work or you decide to sit and be a good citizen or a churchgoer, the pain is the same. Right? We somehow think if we really serve Christ, that's when the pain comes. Oh no. Every one of you sitting here is suffering pain on something right now at this moment in your life. It happens anyhow. So why not go after the kingdom? If you feel these things, you have to decide whether to drop your nets or keep on fishing. But if you don't dream the big dream and pursue it, it's going to have little impact on other people's lives. I'm not saying you won't have an impact. You'll have a little impact. But what are you shutting down? I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling in which you were called, Paul said. We have been called first to love God and second to love one another, right? Amen. That's what we've been talking about. And the word for love is an action verb. It is not a passive verb. It's an action verb. In other words, do it. Love people, do it. That's what we've been called to do. We know all this because a scribe comes to Jesus and says, "What's the first commandment of all?" to trick him up. And Jesus answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself." Those two commandments are the greatest. And we see it through the Bible over and over. I even did a series on all the places in the Bible where it tells us to love. Love one another. And so Jesus says, love God and people. And we have got to declare the dream for us as a church, as a people, as individuals. You've got to declare your dream. So how many of you have a vision or a dream for Christ taped to your mirror? Pretty convicting, huh? You know, I remember when Debbie used to answer a problem. I was out of the ministry for about 5 years and really wasn't accomplishing much. And I felt closed down, discouraged. And she would say, "Honey, your job is your ministry." Man, I hated it when she said that. Your job is a ministry. Yeah, right. I was making sealants and caulking compounds. That sounds very ministry-oriented. And she would repeat it over and over. She'd say, where are you at? And I said, "Well, I'm just discouraged." "Honey, your job is your ministry." One day she said that and it clicked. And I thought, you know what? Maybe I do need to think about that. And instead of just having the usual maybe conversations about Christ or where they're at, all of a sudden, the impact that I had on families was incredible. With my workers, I was teaching them how to work, how to counseling them. It became a total ministry. People came to Christ there. A lot of the workers I hired were already Christians, and I had people calling me a year or two after I left there saying, "Thank you so much. You taught me how to work. You taught me how to take care of my family. And you told me how to love my wife." You know, I heard a story about a woman that drove a bus in San Francisco who had a big dream. Her dream was, "Love my bus and love the people that get on it." There's an audacious goal. So she loves God. She keeps a positive attitude, and she loved every soul that walked on that bus every day on her route. She would even supply breakfast snacks for people so they could eat a little bit while they're on there. And pretty soon, she built a community on that bus, so much so that people that had a car quit driving their car and took the bus every day so they could ride it with her. And they wait for that bus and get on, and pretty soon, all of them are visiting each other at their home. They have her over and her husband for dinner. They even offered her their vacation home for a vacation. She'd go and visit them in the hospital. They would visit her when there was problems. And she built this community around Christ because she had an audacious goal of loving her bus and loving the people to get on. Now we can do that, can't we? I mean, I want you to stop and think of this. When did God ever give us a job that wasn't, that was hard? Not hard. I mean, Abraham, circumcision. Oh, man, can you imagine? No. Well, I just have to be honest, right? Okay. I think of Chuck Smith, who started Calvary Chapels, and he started 1,400 Calvary Chapel churches, planted those. I think of John Wimber, who broke off and did Vineyard churches, and he did 1,200 churches. He had an audacious goal. I think of like Amy McPherson, in fact, where we were at our hotel, she was right near, and she started the Four Square movement. Have you ever heard of Four Square? Yeah, there's, I can't remember how many thousands of churches there are. Dwight L. Moody, he did a Sunday school class. Why do we know his name? Because he won so many kids to Christ, and he began to preach to adults, and he began to travel the United States preaching. Billy Graham started out preaching in a tent, and he preached so fast nobody understood what he said. And I got to listen to that recording one time, and it was like, man, he was going to town. At 95 years old, with Parkinson's disease, where he can hardly talk, he did a video with him in it. And we saw the video here. Do you remember quite a few years back? And we invited people. 51 people came to Christ here at this church, prayed the prayer, signed the commitment card for Billy Graham, because Billy had a dream. And that dream was so big, he won more people to Christ in that video series than he did all the years up to it at 95 years old. 95. Gosh, are we dreaming poorly? They had a big dream. What's your dream?